All right, guys, week two of the NFL season is behind us. This is the Weekside Podcast. I'm Connor Orr alongside Jenny Prentice. And Jenny, in 1 week since we last started this podcast, we had our debut episode to massive fanfare, I would say, and that's just putting it lightly. We've lost Ben Roethlisberger for the entire season, Drew Brees for 6 weeks. Eli Manning is no longer the starting quarterback of the New York football Giants. Cam Newton, there's something kind of percolating there in Carolina, whether that's an injury or what kind of whatever's going on there, maybe the shoulder that he had surgery on this offseason. So, I mean, we've got a lot to catch up on here. In the 6 days since we've seen each other, the entire NFL has changed.
The entire landscape has changed. Backup quarterback position has become more important than ever this early in the season. It does seem like a very extreme amount of quarterback turnover so early on.
Yeah. I remember you wrote the story on kind of the premium of backup quarterbacks. Was that around the Nick Foles time?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean, this is like that on almost like steroids, right? Because these are teams that are all theoretically still looking to be in the playoffs.
Right, right. I think the Saints are pretty well equipped. I think they're in a good spot with Teddy Bridgewater, a former starter that had a lot of interest, right, from other teams. So I think that, and Breeze is only out for 6 weeks, so they have a pretty good chance, I think, of still keeping things on course. But the Steelers, you really wonder about that situation.
Yeah. So the Steelers earlier this week, you know, they named Mason Rudolph their starter. They know Ben Roethlisberger is out for the rest of the season, and then traded their 2020 first round pick to the Dolphins for Minkah Fitzpatrick. That seems like an awful lot of confidence in a mid-round pick. And theoretically, if they bought him out, that could be the pick that they used to draft Ben Roethlisberger's actual successor.
That trade was strange to me.
Yeah.
Because it's not something we see the Steelers do ever. And it's a player that you're trying to maximize, I suppose, the short-term window of Roethlisberger when he's back next year. But I'm a little stunned by that move.
I would guess that out of the teams that we'd mentioned at the top of the show, the one team that's actually, you know, this is fine, right, is the Giants. And I think that we're both surprised that maybe, I know I am, I don't know if you are, that this happened as early as it did. I think there were certain soft spots in the schedule that Pat Shurmur would have liked to have hit. This is certainly one of them when you have Tampa Bay on the road and then Washington, two of the kind of the worst defenses that you're going to play this season. But I don't know, are you surprised that Eli Manning is no longer the start? 15 years and it's done. Yeah.
It's surprising it happened this early. However, after the performances of the first 2 weeks, it made total sense. So I think we all thought we'd see Daniel Jones sometime around midseason, but you're right. Now is a good time. First start is at Tampa. You know, it seemed like it made sense to do it now.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit later because there's some stuff that I definitely want to ask you about that. But the one other thing here is Cam Newton. And I know that we talked about this on the MMQB podcast a few weeks back, but this idea that, you know, there are certain teams that are, it would seem, on the path to the number one pick to get a franchise quarterback, and that's a planned thing. But there are teams like Carolina that all of a sudden, if something happens to Cam Newton, or, you know, if he's not the same guy, we saw how ineffective they've been over those last 2 weeks. Did they all of a sudden enter the conversation? That's a team that, you know, while it's a smaller market and maybe they don't get talked about as much, I'm fascinated to see what happens there, because what if you make a change from a longtime franchise quarterback? Ron Rivera's been there for almost a decade. I mean, you have a new owner, a lot of different situations there. I think Carolina's really interesting too.
I think it's really interesting, and they are a team that could be in the market for a high draft pick used on a quarterback next year if we don't see an improvement in Cam's health situation. But he's really had a lot of struggles the last couple of years health-wise, and I think it's safe to wonder at this point, you know, if we've seen the best of Cam already.
It's so weird. You know, I was thinking about this earlier this week, this idea of, because I think you could put yourself in a general manager's shoes and always hold out hope that they're going to be the same guy again, you know, mm-hmm. year after year after year, and you push the inevitable down the road. The Giants certainly did
certainly
that systematically, you know, but this idea that every year this whole cycle starts all over again and you're just praying that this person's the same, and look at all these teams now. I mean, that's crazy that this happened all at once.
Right. You're right. That's exactly what it is. It's kind of pushing it down the road. We don't need to address it now, but that's why you should draft a quarterback a year and always have options.
I feel like it's what, you know, your parents used to say. It's just better to deal with it now. You know, stop procrastinating.
Is that what your parents said?
Quit procrastinating. Do your homework. It's better to just get it done. All right. You want to, what do we have here? We're going to get into our news topics. And then, like I said, last week, if you listen to the show, but a bunch of fun stuff coming here at the end. But first, we're going to get through some of the weekend football here.
All right. First news topic. Minkah Fitzpatrick orchestrated his way out of Miami, and now Jalen Ramsey is trying to do the same. This after a summer where Antonio Brown forced his way off two different teams to join the Patriots. Is this a new trend on the horizon, or are we simply witnessing the boiling over of a few flitting millennials? It's really great to have you writing these show topics, Connor.
My best writing appears in our texts.
And everyone can listen to it every Wednesday morning. So it's really benefiting the masses,
We're
Connor.
We're finally figuring out a way.
It's benefiting our 15 listeners. Hello. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for coming back.
So it was a weird scene. I was in Miami on Sunday. Strange scene seeing Minkah Fitzpatrick out there after his trade request became public and then playing in a game a couple days later. And if you're his teammate, that's an odd feeling too, knowing that he doesn't want to be here. Is he giving 100%? I heard, you know, fans in the stands were kind of, you know, heckling him a little bit, yelling his name when he would come down, you know, when the defense was close to their side of the field. So just sort of a bizarre scene. And it's no surprise then that he would be traded. It's an interesting question for an organization. If a player really wants out, what is the best course of action? And the Dolphins said they tried to talk with him, tried to convince him to be there. But at what point do you just cut your losses like these teams are doing? Or how long do you keep trying to make it work?
It's right. That's actually a really good point. So there's a fine line where, you know, you take the guy out, you know, you show him that personal attention, but at what point do you look like you're ignoring everybody else or putting someone on a pedestal because you're that desperate to want them to want to be there? And there's, like, you know, we've talked about this a little bit, but there's so many emotional hurdles to this that I don't know if a lot of tanking teams consider, but, you know, just in Miami alone, just in the tentacles that offshoot from that, it's not only, you know, just how these guys are feeling and whether they want to be there and whether they want to commit long term. I mean, that takes so much emotional strength, I think, for a coach, for an organization to do something about it, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's a big challenge. It's hard for a first-year coach. You don't even really have time to get players to buy in, and you already have guys wanting out of town. So how do you think the Ramsey situation will resolve itself?
Yeah, we were watching the press conference earlier today, which was, I would say, bizarre by normal standards. And that's the thing. It was on Monday Night Football during the pregame that I was watching Steve Young say that, oh, well, this is going to turn into the NBA. How awful is this that all these guys are going to want to just go play with their friends and want to play in better situations and better markets? And what a terrible thing that would be. My counter to that would be that I think is the best part about the NBA. I think that's why they're garnering a younger audience. I think that people follow the game differently than they used to. And I would be fine with more trades and more active player movement because it works out better for everybody. You want to be where you are. You're going to play harder. You feel safer, or, you know, you feel better coached, whatever it is. I mean, all that, I think, contributes to a better lifestyle.
Trades are exciting and yes. Players are empowered. I agree. I think it's a win-win.
Yeah. But yeah, the Ramsey situation, it would seem, I don't know. I mean, the asking price at this point, I mean, we're in the Monopoly money phase, I feel like. Two first round picks for Laremy Tunsil and Kenny Stills, and then a first round pick for Minkah Fitzpatrick, which could be a very high first round pick. I mean, at this point, I don't want to say that general managers are devaluing these picks, but what it looks like they're, I don't know, they're dealing from... It's like they're just struck oil or something. Like that,
yeah, it's, you know? Like desperate, the desperate strategy, right? For the Texans, it was almost like they didn't really have a great strategy for addressing the tackle position in free agency, and then it got to the point where it was desperate. So if there is this player movement, do you just sort of bank on the fact that hey, you could just make a last minute trade and fix the need that way? Whereas in the past, it was much harder to pry players from teams.
I think about how many times that I have listened to coaches say that it's impossible to do this because I can't teach them my system and they're going to need too long to learn this. And you're plugging and playing left tackles, safeties. I mean, to me, some of the hardest positions, maybe not, maybe left tackle is not as safety. You have to learn the whole defense and there's not a guy in front of you that you're directly responsible for. But I mean, Minkah Fitzpatrick's going to play on Sunday.
Yeah, I think it's a challenge. I actually think left tackle is a big challenge. And I think you're sort of seeing that a little bit in Houston. It's not easy for the line to all be in sync and
That's
all
true.
Be on the same page. I saw the other side of that in Miami, and part of that is the talent deficit. But that unit just didn't play together much in the preseason, and lots of moving parts. They lose Tunsil days before the opener, and they're having struggles coming together. And I think the same thing goes when you just plop a new left tackle in the same week that he has to play.
You know what you just said reminds me of, right?
The 2011 Jets. Wait.
Jenny and I, so if you didn't miss the first podcast, Jenny and I first worked together back at the Star Ledger in 2010 and 11 in Newark. I was Jenny's number two on the Jets beat. And so sometimes in this podcast, we're going to reference things from a Jets team that occurred a decade ago. So for your for the younger audience, just have your Wikipedia page.
Yeah, largely forgettable, except if you're us.
Yeah. So I remember this was cataclysmic at the time when the Jets lost Nick Mangold. And then when you wrote that story on how the center is the nerve center of the entire offensive line. And I remember learning a lot from that and saying like, okay, this totally makes sense. But you're right. I mean, plugging and playing an offensive lineman at any part of that chain is probably crazy, especially when you consider the fact that there's a franchise quarterback here at stake too.
Everyone needs a friend or a coworker like Connor Orr who promotes a story that was mediocre 10 years ago. But thank you.
People should go back and read more of our old newspaper stories. I think in general, because all they're doing is just yellowing in my closet right now. But all right, speaking of the New York market, Jenny and I both cover the Giants. So this will be kind of another fun trip down memory lane. The Giants pulled the plug on Eli Manning this afternoon, potentially ending in this afternoon being Tuesday when we're recording this podcast. Pulled the plug on Eli Manning, ending his 15-year tenure as the team's starting quarterback. Have we seen the last of Eli Manning? And what I'm particularly interested to hear from you is how, if you're the Giants, are you going to handle this to make sure that Daniel Jones succeeds? Just because we've both seen situations there where transitions have been a little weird. Ben McAdoo's first week as head coach, Tom Coughlin, was still running on the treadmill. They couldn't get that guy out of there.
Right.
He told him he couldn't take his signs down. You had to keep the clocks the same way. Could this be something similar than that? I don't know.
I actually think he's in a pretty decent spot to do well. Good running back. The line has been upgraded. They've really addressed that. They have issues at receiver, obviously, and on the other side of the ball. But a good run game and a good offensive line are quarterback's best friend, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it's terrible. But listen, we all know my stance that Daniel Jones might be okay. Like, that is, in April, that was a bold take, that Daniel Jones might be okay, right? That was a bold take. But now everyone's all in on the Daniel Jones train.
You know what we need, and I've been saying this for a long time, you need take equity, right? Because if you buy low, like we have very loudly on certain things, me saying that the Raiders are going to be terrible for the duration of John Gruden's tenure, you saying that Daniel Jones is going to be good, you deserve the credit when that take then becomes commonplace, right? I mean, I'm not saying I get a little mad, but when some people are like, wow, it was kind of crazy that the Raiders hired John Gruden, I'm like, come on,
Get on board.
Get on board. And, people were, the Daniel Jones trade was roundly mocked. And I remember sitting next to you in the podcast studio the day after two days after the draft, you saying this guy was going to be good. Danny Dimes comes out of nowhere, lights up the preseason, and, if you're a stock buyer right now, you bought Amazon at 11 cents.
There were people calling for them to replace Eli with Daniel Jones because they were that confident in the rookie. I mean, we'll see. We still don't know. He looked good in the preseason. We still don't know. But I think this was the right move, and I don't think he's in a terrible position here.
I totally agree. The one thing that I find ridiculous about the situation is how can anyone still be pearl clutching about this, about Eli, and saying that he wasn't given enough chances? My God. I mean, you know, if any starting quarterback in the NFL has been given more chances, more opportunities, more upgrades, more players to fit your system, better coaches, all of that stuff, I mean, it's time to move on. I mean, he had a good run. He won two Super Bowls. Like, let's get out of here, you know?
Yeah, I agree, Connor. I agree. It'll be an interesting rest of the season for the Giants. And at least they can say that, right?
But now everything starts to point upward again, right? Because it was just this whole, I almost feel like it's been 6 years of just like turbulence. Like,
totally.
Let's fix the plane. We can fix the plane. We don't need a new plane. Now, bought a new plane and everything's fine. You know, it might be hard to learn to drive at first, but at least you're not worried about it.
You know, Eli's first season was that way. Mm-hmm. It was bumpy for a while.
Yeah.
So.
And the other thing that I find a little ridiculous is the idea, the Giants, everyone needs a quarterback now and the Giants are going to get rid of this guy and he's just going to light it up. Who's trading for Eli Manning? The Saints aren't trading for Eli Manning. The Steelers aren't trading for Eli Manning. The Jaguars aren't trading for Eli Manning. I'm trying to think. Am I missing anybody?
That says all you need to know right there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody's trading for him. I think he's done. I just think that, you know, this is one of those things that the Giants will figure out a nice way to ceremoniously move on because he can't be your backup next year. I don't think he's going to play somewhere else. You know, he's made his home there in New Jersey. To me, it doesn't make sense. You collect the rest of your, I think he still is due to make $16 or $17 million this season. Take the rest of that and I think you just go home, hang it up.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that they might have a sort of farewell type situation for him.
Right? Like, wouldn't that make sense? Like
late in the season.
It would be hard to do it the same way that the Yankees did with Derek Jeter, where the Yankees were able to hide him defensively for like 4 years just to keep him there, you know, to keep people coming to see him. Can't do that with a quarterback, but I don't know what you would do. I mean, what's the right thing to do? Have him take
the last couple series or something?
Yeah, like, because the home games are probably going to be largely meaningless. I hate to say
No, this is true, right? So late in the year,
you almost have to make that call, like after Thanksgiving, you know?
Right.
And to say, okay, well, you know, but here's the thing. They've put it in a position where it can't be unawkward at all, right?
Right,
because
it
can't not be awkward because if you're doing that, if you're having Eli Manning literally take ceremonial snaps, now I'm being outraged at an idea that I just pitched myself. But you're taking Daniel Jones off the field and the whole point is to get him reps. But they have to do something now. They've ingrained him so much in the texture and the fabric of this team that they can't not do something like that, right? It's just one of those things that I'm not envious of the person that has to come up with that idea, I think, to make it feel right and to make it feel whatever it is.
And it's almost never, like you said, it's almost never a player goes out on his own terms.
Right.
But they'll figure out something.
So nice, you know, just a nice, take him out for a nice dinner. Yeah, that's all I ever want. You know?
I mean, listen, Coughlin didn't have a nice send off. So,
no.
You know,
that's very true.
The MMQB podcast is brought to you by DraftKings. Let me ask you, is there anything better than watching football? Of course there is. Watching football with the DraftKings lineup on the line, especially this week. DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is giving new users a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit when you sign up with our code MMQB. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch mean more with the DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. And by the way, if he's healthy on Sunday, this is the week Chargers wide receiver Mike Williams is gonna take off. Plus, all new and existing users get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's some extra cash to play with this football season. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at over $1.5 million in prizes. Download the DraftKings app now and use code MMQB. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. New users, don't forget to enter our code MMQB to get a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit. That's code MMQB only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. We're also brought to you by Legacy Box. You know, every Christmas, our family tradition was to gather around and watch a local public access holiday special featuring my mom's preschool class in which my little brother was enrolled. It was fantastic. We had a confused Santa, kids literally tripping over each other, and so much nose picking. It was an old VHS tape, though, and because of that, it had been years since we saw it. That is, until we found Legacy Box. Legacy Box is the world's largest, most trusted digitizer of home movies and photos. Send your Legacy Box filled with old home movies and pictures, and they'll do the rest, professionally digitizing your moments onto a thumb drive, digital download, or DVD. They have easy-to-follow instructions and safety barcodes included for every item. You'll receive all your original recorded moments back, along with perfectly preserved digital copies. Plus, get personalized email updates every step of the way. There's never been a better time to digitally preserve your memories. Visit LegacyBox.com today to get started. Plus, for a limited time, they're offering our listeners an exclusive discount. Go to LegacyBox.com/save to get 40% off your first order. Go to LegacyBox.com/save and save 40% today. Get started preserving your past.
Speaking of potentially unnice send-offs, Jamal Adams unfollowed the Jets on Instagram in either the hours before or after Monday night's demoralizing loss to the Browns, which also included their backup Trevor Siemian getting lost for the season, a couple other injuries on that front. What is happening on the other side of town in New York, and what do you make of this team that seemed to use the offseason to spend their way into playoff contention?
Yeah. That team is in chaos, it seems. The quotes coming out of the post-game locker room from the Jets were very troubling. And the Jamal Adams situation materializing after that just sort of reinforces that there is chaos.
As someone who is quite petulant, I will say that unfollowing on social media is number one on in my playbook. I've done it. I'm not proud of it, but I will say that if I am at all on the same wavelength as Jamal Adams, I know how he's feeling, you know, and sometimes you gotta hit the blue button. You gotta unfollow, you know.
Yeah, it is amazing how the fortunes or the predictions for this season have really quickly flipped on the Jets. We went into it thinking Sam Darnold is going to take off under Adam Gase. Then he gets mono. And then they have a game like they, you know, two straight losses. But I think looking at the roster, it's not very good.
No.
The line has a ton of issues. The cornerback position is bad. They obviously benched Tremaine Johnson for most of the game. It was a big price free agent signing just a year ago. So clearly the roster had a lot of issues to fix this year. So I think I personally, who picked the Jets for the playoffs, got caught up in the whole, hey, Sam Darnold's going to take a big step forward, and this is a team that can have that first year coach ride that energy into the playoffs. And I think re-looking at the roster, even with the healthy Darnold, that was probably a miscalculation on my part.
But it's so weird because we both had the same feeling about the Jets, and we both had a similar feeling of on the Browns on the back end, right?
Yes.
Where we were skeptical of all the spending and the first year head coach and the rise of the quarterback. And I wonder like what happens where it makes you feel one way and then feel a certain way the other way, you know?
Well, with the Browns, it was the line that I was skeptical of. And also just the fact that you're putting together a lot of different, you know, new additions to the team, and would that chemistry work? You don't know. A lot of the players were frustrated at having been cast off from past teams, and I think that it was just it seemed like a little bit of a risk, right? Would all of this mesh together under coach that hadn't had experience really leading a roster of 53 players and keeping them all in the same direction. So, and I'm still not sold that. Yeah, I mean, last night's win, I don't think really showed anything.
No, and it was funny. It almost reminded me, the Browns yesterday, their offense was just going in fits and stops, and they were reminded me of the way that Odell used to pull the Giants out of, mm-hmm. you know, similar ruts, you mm-hmm. know? I mean, that RPO that he took 89 yards for a touchdown was, you know, while the Giants weren't running those exact plays, sort of a similar idea, that quick slant where somehow he finds a lane and breaks, you know, 70, 80 yards for a touchdown. I mean, that's really what carried them. I mean, he carried them through that game yesterday. And to me, I'm not ready to buy in on them either, because something doesn't feel fluid or right about them either.
Right. Know? It doesn't feel. And I know you're going to write about Baker later this week,
yeah.
but you made some good points there about just not feeling, looking, he doesn't look entirely like himself.
Yeah. You know, the one person that does look right, though, after that whole thing is Le'Veon Bell. It was the one person that everybody was kind of worried about.
Yeah.
And he had a great game.
He took that year off to refresh his body, you know? I thought he would be as good as he was before. And I think that break sometimes, if a position where you take a lot of pounding, maybe it's a good thing.
Interesting, too, for the Giants fans who are listening. Saquon Barkley was asked about that, said it's kind of something that he's keeping an eye on. So,
interesting.
Just all saying.
Right. All right. Topic number four. Hey, the Bills are 2 Hey, the Bills are 2-0, as are the 49ers, Ravens, and Packers. How many of these teams will be able to sustain their surprising starts? And how many will flounder by the time we hit the midway point of the season? I'm all in on the Ravens and the Packers, mm-hmm. not all in on the Bills and the 49ers.
Okay.
Bills often have a hot start.
Yes.
I feel like Bills are commonly decent in September. I think there are reasons to think that this team could be decent, but I'm not all in yet.
Okay. I'm 80% in on the Bills. I went up there in the preseason. I liked the fact that they forced Josh Allen to throw almost on every snap that he took in the preseason. I think their pass-to-run ratios when he was in games on the preseason were like 16-2 or like, you know,
wow.
14-3.
Okay.
And Brian Daboll said that. He was like, yeah, that's on purpose. You know, we don't care about winning preseason games. We need him to throw like in the preseason against every kind of defense, against different defenders. You want to throw the hard routes and all that kind of stuff. I think that was a great idea. Something mm-hmm. that I haven't heard a lot of people at least openly discuss, right?
Yeah.
Is that sort of purposeful thing that you would do in the preseason. But I do think that he's taken some steps, and I do think really they've figured out a way to use him more functionally, and at least while you're waiting for everything else to come around, using his strengths, I guess, to your advantage, and at least moving the football a little mm-hmm. bit, like getting the ball down the field. The Packers, I don't know. I think we kind of differ on that. Like, I don't know. Something about the preseason still is making me feel like a little skeevy about getting all in on the Packers. I don't know.
There are a lot of digs between the QB, not between the QB and his head coach, one direction.
Yeah.
From the QB to his head coach.
Has anyone else, like, I don't know, you can, if you're listening to this podcast, I guess you could just yell it out in your car, say, I agree, I totally saw that. But especially in their first win against the Bears, you know, he like sort of like elbows Matt LaFleur in the stomach, and then everyone just goes and hugs Mike Pettine, the defensive coordinator, after they won the game. And then he's giving the speech afterwards, Aaron Rodgers, and they're handing over the game ball to LaFleur, his first win as an NFL head coach, a big moment. He says, well, the defense should really get this. what are you doing?
Right.
You know? And that could be, I will say that some people just in the moment, you're not thinking about that, and you're trying as a quarterback, as a leader, to pump up everybody and make mm-hmm. sure that they feel, the defense feels appreciated for what they've done there. But it's just, if you were a head coach and that happened to you, you'd feel a little like
yeah.
crappy about it. You
yeah.
know?
I think of the four teams here, the Ravens are the clear leader of the group, I think. I mean, look like they have a clear line to win the division with Roethlisberger out, some questions about the Browns, Bengals kind of up and down.
I did not see that coming. I had to predict the entire schedule back in July, and I picked Baltimore to go 4-12 And I was worried because at the time, do you remember the big storyline was that Greg Roman was going to completely wipe out the playbook and start over? And I was like, I like the one last year.
Yeah.
Why are you changing it? It's perfect. But I don't think, like, again, I feel like that was an overblown statement, maybe. I don't think it was wiped out. I think they added some nice wrinkles into it that accentuate that feel. Because I remember when Baltimore lost in the playoffs to the Chargers last year, John Harbaugh was saying, we're going all in on Lamar. We're going to get more players that are better at ball security. We're going to get tougher up front. I mean, and I thought, this is a great idea. The rest of the NFL is getting faster and smaller, and you're getting bigger. You're getting better at ball control, and you're still getting faster. You're getting Marquise Brown and Lamar Jackson. You're letting them loose and stuff. But the idea that they were going to change the playbook scared me. I was, you know, I thought that if they were going to run another offense, that wasn't going to work. But instead, I feel like they're running almost a supercharged version of the offense that they were running last year.
Yeah. Yeah. What about the Niners?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
That's like that, always that, like, you know, I just feel like they're going to finish 8-8, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not totally bought in.
I don't think so either. I think their defense does look a lot better, though. That's one thing that I will say.
You would hope. Yeah. After all of the investment of draft picks, right?
Yeah. 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 I mean, what do you have? 4 first-rounders
on the defensive line?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? I think so. Solomon Thomas, DeForest Buckner, Bosa.
Frank. Or, yeah, right?
That was 3.
D Ford.
That's right. D Ford.
Frank Clark was.
Yeah, right, right.
You guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we just had a momentary brain lapse.
Forgive us. Okay, Jenny, the Saints are 1-1.
Mm-hmm.
But for the third, I wrote down for the third playing week in a row.
Oh, I knew what you meant.
but for the third week in a row, they've sustained a major officiating controversy. Now they're losing their starting quarterback. And we've talked about emotional weight that a coach has to carry and manipulate throughout a season. If you're Sean Payton, and like, how do you keep sort of coming back every day? And, you know, I remember when Bounty Gate happened and the players that I spoke to a lot that were on that team during that time, the year after Bounty Gate, they were excellent. They had a really good team because Sean Payton made them all believe that, hey, the NFL is doing this to you. Mm-hmm. They're ruining your careers and your seasons. And then that ended up yielding some success. I don't know if you can play that note again. I don't know if they have necessarily, but it's got to be hard every week because he does make it a point to talk about the officiating, that these calls aren't going their way. And at what point does it feel like you're just sort of inviting a big rain cloud over your facility?
Right. You know? At a certain point, you feel like you just can't win, and what's the use in trying? You know, I think that's a feeling a lot of us can relate to. Things just aren't going your way. Forces maybe out of your control. And then you just, it's easy to become demoralized.
I would find it hard. I think, you know, that takes a lot of emotional maturity, I think, from a coach. Like that's why I think a lot
of emotional intelligence, some might say.
Emotional intelligence, yeah. It makes me think of someone like Dan Quinn, where, you know, you see him and he's always upbeat, or Pete Carroll. I mean, that's sort
super
of
positive.
From that school,
right?
Where like every day is just like energy,
and
every day is the best day of your life. And how hard that must be to continuously do that day after day. And maybe you really believe it. And if so, that's great perspective to have on your life. But, you know, man, like maybe if you're the Saints, could you use something like that right now? Just like someone to come in and say, everything's great. Everything's fine. Yeah. You know, we don't have to worry about refs, but I don't know. It's got to be very difficult to do.
The MMQB podcast is brought to you by Roman. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health. Whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse, guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. That lower back pain, well, if you don't think about it, it'll just go away, right? The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to chat with a doctor online. With Roman, you can get medical care for ED, if appropriate, from the comfort and privacy of your own home. You can handle everything online in a convenient, discreet manner. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMQB and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides that treatment would be appropriate, they can prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free 2-day shipping. Guys, go talk to the doctor. Erectile dysfunction can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get checked out. With Roman, it's easy to connect with a doctor. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMQB to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/MMQB for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/MMQB.
But can we talk about the ref situation here?
Yeah.
It has been, you brought it up last week, and I think that probably should have been your Oracle segment because you really called the crisis that was going on, and I totally downplayed it last week. But I think we're seeing the impact of inexperienced officiating crews. There was a ton of officiating turnover last year, and I think this is a reflection of it this year too, right? You know, a lot of these inconsistent calls. Even this hasn't even been talked about that much, but last night we were watching several defenseless player hits that weren't flagged.
Yeah.
And it's just hard to understand. And I think players don't have a clear sense of what's what. And it feels like the distrust in officiating, well, there's always some of that, right? There's always bad call here and there, but it feels like the distrust is higher than, you know, carrying over from the end of last year. It's just, it's picked up right where it's left off.
No doubt. And it's weird because if you're the NFL, right, you have the moral high ground to say, we made it a point of emphasis. Do you remember last year? We wanted to focus on all this stuff. And now with all these inexperienced officials, it doesn't really matter if it's not being policed effectively. You know, The two defenseless player hits that we were talking about in the Jets game on Monday, I remember that was the play. The first one was that David Njoku got the concussion.
Yes.
Right? And, you know, clearly not a situation where that guy needs to get hit from the backside and then he flips and lands on his neck, in between his neck, his shoulder and his helmet. And then he's off in concussion protocol. And then I think it was the third quarter or the second quarter, maybe, Odell Beckham gets that screen pass on the near side of your television screen. There's two guys that have him. And then Jamal Adams is maybe 15 yards away and then comes in full force while he's already in the grasp. I mean,
yeah, that one would have been some kind of roughing,
yeah,
a late hit, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these feel like, you know, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's weird because I think we've had more admitted mistakes, which is almost stranger. Like we heard, I think it was J.J. Watt or one of the players was tweeting the other day that, oh, they didn't call holding on a play because he got a tackle for a loss anyway. And so like the ref just told him to move on. There was the weird, you know, the roughing the passer that Vic Fangio complained about this weekend that cost them the game, I think was definitely significant. Miles Garrett was voicing his frustration after the Jets game last night for some of the hits that that he made. I think it's going to be interesting. And, you know, this is small potatoes compared to everything else that we've talked about. But the Browns were flagged 15 yards for that blindside block on the first week of the season. Greg Robinson was flagged for that. And then exact same play that the Falcons used to set up the game-winning touchdown, to score the game-winning touchdown against the Eagles, with Jake Matthews makes the same block on a cornerback, and it's not called. And people see this stuff. You know, coaches see this stuff, and it sinks in at some point, and you wonder if that's going to sow distrust. I mean, even more so than there is now.
Yeah, you called that one last week. That was a great observation.
I don't know. I mean, where do you go from here if you're Al Riveron? Like, what do you try to do to maybe bring this back a little bit?
You know, I think it was interesting that in the spring when the Saints pushed through the change to pass interference being now reviewable, it was interesting to see that Riveron in the league office sort of ceded some of the control or the power.
Yeah.
And I was wondering when it happened back then, because that was really pushed through by, you know, Peyton and a group that he led. And now I wonder if they just see I wonder if they'll need to make a change at the top officiating post.
Yeah.
As a result.
Yeah.
And that's not, I just think that there's been a lot of questions over it, and you wonder about the power and the influence of Command Central at the league office.
You wonder too if you know, because I think that the NFL has been aided by, and maybe this is sort of an advantage to having all this player movement and all this craziness going on. We're not talking about officiating, right? We're talking about something else, you mm-hmm. know, all this stuff going on, all these crazy trades, first round picks flying everywhere. But once that settles down and we start getting into the meat of this season when the games actually matter, I think that the focus is going to pivot squarely onto officiating if they haven't gotten this ironed out yet.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to bump, so we have two segments that you guys, our loyal 15 listeners, know about that we like to end the show on. The first, I'll flip them because I want to hear this. I want to get a little bit into this, is our Ventus consensus where, you know, guys, everyone argues about everything nowadays. It's hard to find common ground. And on the Weak Side podcast, the Ventus consensus is all about bringing people together, sharing opinions that we both agree on. And while I don't think that everybody in the world should agree on everything, I do think it's a good example that we're trying to set for everybody else that, hey, you know, it's okay to say, I agree, you know?
I think my planning was poor because we delved into it a little bit earlier. But for this week's Frantis Consensus, I think it's Daniel Jones could be good.
I agree.
Daniel yeah. Jones could be good.
Yeah.
I am interested to see how this season goes. And I don't even think this season, as we know, we expect some bumps to happen in his first year. But I think he could be a pretty good quarterback. And I remember talking to evaluators before the draft. The reason that I thought he would be the second quarterback off the board, which he was after Kyler Murray, was a lot of the feedback I heard, and I think it was coaches that liked him perhaps more than some personnel evaluators, mm-hmm. but the coaches really liked it's that stupid intangible of toughness, but it's yeah. true. They saw him get battered a lot and keep throwing, and they thought he had a good outlook, and a lot of people said the more they watched him, he really grew on them. So that's why I thought at that point, I said, you know what, this is going to be the second quarterback taken, and he was, and when the Giants picked him, I wasn't shocked, right? Because I knew that there were coaches that really liked the guy. And so I'm interested to see that play out in the regular season.
And I think it could happen sooner, the progress, because you know, I thought that Pat Shurmur did an excellent job of handling the preseason against all odds, right? Because it's almost impossible if you're Pat Shurmur to make everybody happy in that situation, to keep Eli feeling like he's the starter, but to get Daniel Jones ready to play. The two of them played almost the exact same amount of snaps with the starting offense in the preseason. And I think Daniel Jones played slightly more with the starting offense and against starting caliber defensive players. When I went back to look at their snaps, I think that's what I ended up tallying. So, and he played well. Mm-hmm. I mean, and obviously some of that stuff, some of his better throws might have been padded in the third quarter of games and stuff, but Daniel Jones was also treated like a starter in the preseason. I think he had starters' minutes, he played with good players, and he played well. And mm-hmm. so I think that I wouldn't be surprised, and I think it's smart to play him now against Tampa, against Washington, and get your feet wet before a Patriots game, which is coming down the pike, you know?
So we'll end on the Oracle. Now, this is the big week for Connor Orr. I just want to direct our listeners to this week's issue of the magazine. It is Connor Orr's first Sports Illustrated cover story, which is a really big moment, and I'm really proud of you, Connor.
Thank you.
I hate the word proud because that sounds condescending,
no.
but I'm really happy for you. You did a great job on the story. The cover looks great. Star Power, which we said is a little anti our brand here because Weak Side Podcast is really because we're not stars. But Star Power, enjoy your star moment. So this feeds into the Oracle because it's about the Cowboys and how they build a team by essentially getting their players to take a discount because they'll make up the money in other ways.
Yeah. And I think that we have one big contract coming down the pike there. I mean, obviously, it kind of centers a little bit around Dak Prescott. And I think the one thing that we can say for sure, since Stephen Jones said it in the article, was that it's going to be more than $100 million in guarantees, whatever that means for anybody. But I do think it's going to happen soon. I think one of the interesting things about reporting the story was at least I got to understand the way that Jerry Jones's mind works a little bit more. Because at first, especially during the Ezekiel Elliott thing, I was like, ah, what's this guy doing? He's always just saying weird stuff. But I do think that there's a method to it. There's an understanding of the attention and, you know, and cultivating that and everything. And so, you know, the Cowboys are 2-0. A lot of people are viewing them as one of the better or the best teams in the NFL. I think that really, and not to say this in a bad way, but it can only kind of go, it can go uphill from here. You can win a Super Bowl, but you know, if you're Jerry Jones, if the deal is already on the 90-yard line, you know, or the whatever the 1-yard line, whatever analogy you want to use, I think I would not be surprised if in the next week they punch this over the goal line. And that's not me reporting it. That's just me kind of putting some pieces together and saying, you know, this is the from what I've learned of Jerry, from the moments that the Cowboys like to capitalize on, the fact that the deal's already reported close, that they already understand how much guaranteed money roughly is going to be involved in this deal, and they're probably haggling over some finer points. Wouldn't be surprised if the Cowboys have a long-term franchise quarterback here in the next week, maybe before we tape the next podcast.
Great insight, Connor. We hope everyone picks up a copy of the magazine.
Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to our show this week. The MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Rentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravik is executive director of the MMQB. We get no research help. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.